Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here this morning to the second Thursday Morning Roundtable session of the season. I hope that you have been enjoying the lovely pre-fall weather this past week. And I also hope that you have been looking ahead on the schedule and keeping tabs on the news. We give you the monthly schedule and even a preview ahead so that you can be thinking of questions for our guest speakers. I wanted to remind you that next week we'll be talking to Frank Lazarski of the United Way of Central New York, talking about assessing community needs and priorities. You may know, some of you I'm sure are involved in the United Way and know that they're beginning their next three-year cycle of funding. You might have also noticed in this morning's paper, although it came as no surprise, that poverty rates and unemployment rates in the city of Syracuse are at an all-time high, and the entire region really is lagging in the recovery. So there's a lot of intersection there in things that we read about in the news and things that we are going to be talking about in TMR. And today is no exception. To introduce today's guest speaker, though, I'd like to bring up one of our newest TMR members, Pam Brunet, who is the Executive Director of Leadership Greater Syracuse. I wanted to give you a chance to meet her. Thank you, Pam.
Good morning. I'd like to thank Sandra for giving me a difficult task, that is to introduce someone that needs no introduction. Everybody knows our county executive, correct? So I thought I would take a little a page from some folks that I have learned about when you're given a difficult task. What I do when I've been given a difficult task is I rely on people around me to help me. So that means you guys are going to help me with this, okay? Little participatory, please. At Leadership Greater Syracuse right now, we're interviewing potential candidates for the class of 2014, and we are asking them, what are the characteristics of a good leader? So I'd like you to think for a moment about all the folks that you've come and gone in your life, people maybe you have lived with, people you may have studied with, people you may have worshipped with, people who may have hired you, people you may have hired, and think about the characteristics of what has made them a great leader. Would anyone be willing to share with me a one or two word descriptor of someone that they believe or the characteristics that they see in a good leader? One over here. A person who listens is a great leader. Sandra seconds that. There's plenty more. How about some others? Someone who takes full responsibility. Someone who is highly motivated is a great leader. Someone who has good common sense is a great leader. Someone who has passion for what they're doing. Someone who is innovative. Did you hear that? Someone who can trust you and get out of the way and let you do your job. That is not easy. Someone who works well with others? Absolutely. How about another one. Someone who is well supported. How about someone who is an excellent communicator? Someone who can take criticism. I think those are all, I agree. How about someone who has vision? Someone who has courage? These are all the things that I'm hearing from our Leadership Greater Syracuse candidates for next year. So, and I think we have leaders, you don't have to have a high-level position to be a leader. So we've learned from everyone. I think our community is very fortunate. How generous are we feeling today? I think our county executive embodies all of those characteristics. So with that, I'd like to welcome our county executive, Joni Mahoney, to the microphone and have her share with us how she manages to balance a very difficult situation, and that is the budget.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Good morning. Good morning. It's nice to see you all here this morning. And I wasn't going to, this was going to be my first time ever that I was going to take a pass on telling my Leadership Greater Syracuse story, but when she said they're picking a new class, I just can't resist. I applied for Leadership Greater Syracuse, and I made it all the way through the interview process, but I didn't get in. And that's what I tell people that are in Leadership Greater Syracuse is, you know, it's a work in progress. I've learned as I've gone along, and I have tremendous fondness for Leadership Greater Syracuse. They've turned out fabulous people, and they were wise beyond their years. That was in 19, probably 93 or 94 or something, so you can have a pass. I am here to give you my annual update on county government through the vehicle of the budget. I just presented the budget to the county legislature a week or so ago, and I have kind of compiled the highlights, and I would like to go through the highlights for you, and then one of my favorite things about coming to TMR is entertaining your questions, and they can be about the budget or about really anything that we're doing in county government. So, can you tell I use glasses for one thing and not the other? Sorry. I can't see you now, so you can behave however you want, but I can see my notebook. I presented a balanced budget to the county legislature. I was able to do that because spending is down in this 2014 budget about $40 million from where the budget as modified was adopted last year. So that's good news. That means that I'm presenting a flat levy, and as you all know, the levy is the entire amount of property tax that we collect from county property taxpayers. That levy will remain at about $141 million in the budget in 2014, in my budget, and it's going through a rigorous debate with the legislature now, and they're due to give me their budget, which we will not call the budget anymore, but we'll call the budget as adopted. And then budget as modified during the year when there's changes that are made, they become the budget as modified. But the legislature's giving me back the budget on October 8th. If they don't, then this budget becomes the budget. So I'm guessing that they will give me something on October 8th. $141 million levy. Sales tax has rebounded in Onondaga County. We're back to the levels where we were before the Great Recession hit in October of 2008, and then we had a dramatic decline. The thing that I pointed out to the legislature is, though, that sales tax was on a trajectory we didn't meet, and we're just now getting back to that, and that gap in the middle is about $53 million in sales tax that we would have to spend in Onondaga County had sales tax receipts not fallen off the way they did during the recession. So there's $53 million that, had things gone well, and they don't always go well, but had they gone well, we would have had to do things like pave roads and support our arts and cultural organizations. And so it's resulted in a lot of belt tightening. At the same time that sales tax had dropped off, the legislature reduced the county levy by $39 million. And the levy is a recurring source of revenue for the county. The cumulative effect since the legislature began to lower the levy, the cumulative effect is about 152 million local dollars have not been collected through property tax. And as you all know, because you come to Thursday morning, to Thursday morning roundtable, it's a very complicated issue because the sales tax sharing formula was changed, but the net is that the levy is now down, and with a property tax cap, we can't really rely on being able to bump that up very much if another bump in the road comes along. So the levy was around $180 million. I think it got up a little higher than $180 million, but as I said, it's $141 million now. That's the total amount of money that we collect from you as county property taxpayers. The combination of the sales tax receipts being off and the levy coming down does make it more and more difficult to continue to present a balanced budget, but just when we needed it, there is actually a little bit of good news in this budget. Mandated costs, the bills we get from New York State to administer their programs over which we have no control, mandated costs for the first time that I can ever remember are actually down. And they're bending downward because the governor and the state legislature gave us a hard cap on Medicaid a couple of years ago. Our Medicaid costs are very expensive. And the legislature said, I think when Nick Perot was here, we will cap the growth. And then just 2 or 3 years ago when Andrew Cuomo started, they said, we'll actually give you a hard cap. So our Medicaid costs are fixed in Onondaga County, and we don't intend that they're going to go up anytime soon. And that's actually bringing us relief in this budget. But before you get too excited about mandated costs, they are still $171 million in Onondaga County. So I'm going to keep going back to my $141 million is what we collect in property tax, and we pay $171 million just for our state-mandated programs. That's not parks, that's not roads, that's not a lot of the other things that we do in county government, $171 million for mandates. There's also relief in the budget because Onondaga County, as a county in New York State, is going to benefit from the Affordable Care Act. I know it's very controversial, but if the Affordable Care Act goes through, because New York State has already been much more generous with its health insurance for the poor, we will see some relief from the federal government because of the benefits that we already provide in New York State. So whether the Affordable Care Act goes through or not, I don't know, but I have assumed that it will in this budget, and we do see some savings, and that helps us bring down spending in this budget. Pensions are down ever so slightly, and they have been skyrocketing the entire time I've been here. So any reduction is welcome news. They were accounting for about 21% of our payroll in the 13 budget. Now they're 20%. That's the first time we've seen that bend downward also. In this budget, there's a significant reorganization of our human services departments, and there's people here. I know Sarah Merrick is here. Elaine, you probably would have been up to your neck in the changes that we're making in our human services. I don't know who else is here because I took my glasses off. But the reorganization of our human services department is recognizing that we haven't done the best that I think we can do in terms of customer service in our human services department. People are still coming in as if we're in silos. They're touching many different departments. We're reorganizing the departments in such a way that we'll have an adult services department and a children's services department and try to better meet people's needs. Not only is it more customer friendly, but any efficiency that we can build into the system is a way for me to reduce costs ultimately to the taxpayers that pay the bills for that. Our FTEs, our full-time equivalents, in this budget are 3,464. You're probably the only person that knows what that number means, so I'll put it in context for the rest of you. When I got here, in 2008, we had 4,224 full-time equivalent county employees, and in this budget, there's 3,464. We are continuing to do the kinds of things that we need to do to reduce the size and cost of our government because people around here can't afford what's happened to our taxes, and I'm trying to do my part on the county side. But this human services reorganization isn't going to result in any layoffs or job eliminations, and it's not going to result in any raises for people, but it's the beginning of what we think is going to lead us to a process where we can be more efficient, and when we have retirements, we can reassign work and continue to drive that headcount down. The other big driver in this year's budget is that Van Dyne is no longer in the county budget. As of 2014, we are on track to transfer Van Dyne to Upstate Medical Group on December 1st. We have all of the approvals that we need from the State Health Department, and the good news for us is that our safety net will remain intact. Van Dyne will still exist in our community. It'll be virtually all the same employees. The new owner has agreed that he's transferring, I think, all of the employees, with the exception of some that he believes that, you know, the vast majority of them will come. And he's agreed to keep their salaries where they are. But as there's turnover, then there'll be market rate, and that'll help him operate Van Dyne more efficiently. So the safety net remains intact. And I will tell you that in other counties, they have lost their nursing homes, and the beds are gone, the safety net is gone. So while this was a very difficult decision, it's the best one, I believe, for our community, because Van Dyne exists. It is a wonderful home and hospital. It's a safety net for people for long-term care services, and it will be here, and it will provide good jobs and provide a home for people when they need it at the sometimes at the end of their lives. Our room occupancy tax rate, our room occupancy tax receipts are up 9%. And the reason that that is particularly good news to a lot of the people in this room is when I came into this job, there was an awful lot of conversation about arts organizations and which arts and cultural organizations and the Onondaga Historical Association, which of those organizations would get how much money. And I was sitting around a table at budget time, literally going through all of the arts and cultural organizations, and they've asked for $10,000 and they got $12,000 last year. It didn't seem like the best way to allocate arts funding was to have Joni Mahoney and her team decide, because I'm not intimately familiar with every organization and what its needs are on any given year. The other side of that is the arts organizations came to me and said, we need to be able to plan. We need a recurring source of revenue so that we can plan out into the future. So I put in my budget, I think starting 2 years ago, I told the arts and cultural organizations that I would allocate 22% of the room occupancy tax money that's generated in the county to the arts as a whole for them to divvy up among themselves. So with room occupancy tax receipts up 9% this year, it'll result in a 6% bump for those arts organizations that get money from that pot of money. So that's a I think that's in our best interest. It makes for a healthy arts community, but it also gives an incentive to the arts community to do the kinds of things that are going to sell hotel rooms, bring people in, and then know that they will share in some of the benefit from the folks that are coming to our town, which will then benefit all of us. So that's a lot of the good news. I have a but here. We do have a couple things we're keeping our eye on. I don't know how much you're aware, there have been public safety committee meetings, but we have an overcrowding problem at the Justice Center, and that overcrowding problem at the Justice Center spills into Jamesville. When it becomes too big a problem, we have folks that transfer up to Jamesville. There's a lot of reasons for our overcrowding, and some of those reasons we don't have any control over. The state has closed a lot of facilities, and we're seeing the effect of that. State parolees, the state picks them up and puts them in our jail. We're required by law to keep them in our jail. They generate no revenue for Onondaga County, and we will continue to apply pressure where we can at the state level. But those things that are out of our control, we're kind of setting over here and looking at the things that maybe are under our control. We're proposing in this budget adding a mental health wing. I would never have guessed that I would be building jail cells. So I don't want to leave you with the impression that we're building capacity in the jail. What we're trying to do is address a couple things. Some of the people that are in jail, it's not the best place for them, but it's not me that's putting them in jail. I have the responsibility of operating the jail. And there are people who have real mental health issues, and we are required by law to provide them one-on-one observation to keep them safe and to provide that one-on-one observation with the number of people that we're seeing in the jail that have the need. It is extraordinarily expensive for the county to do that. So I've proposed a mental health wing that will be designed in such a way that we can make that eye contact constantly with fewer staff. So some person can watch 2, 3, 4 people at the same time, because now with the one cell, we have people that are literally one jail deputy with one inmate. And that's the reason for this. So I know there's a lot of people in this room that, particularly in this room, because I've gotten to know a lot of you, that don't really want to solve an overcrowded jail by building more capacity. And I just want to assure you that this is a very strategic decision to try to bring down the most expensive part of operating our jail. We also have union issues which arise when we let the spillover of the overcrowding in the Justice Center go up to Jamesville, because we have two different bargaining units, and the folks that represent the jail deputies, the Deputy Sheriff's Benevolent Association, they have exclusive rights to those inmates. And when we take those inmates and we have to bring them up to Jamesville because we have room at Jamesville, there's a different bargaining unit up there. And we are currently in the midst of solving a union problem. So we get a lot of, we have a lot of moving pieces, and we're trying to just focus on what's under our control and what we can do to mitigate it. We can mitigate the overtime with this mental health unit, but we also have some control over some of the people that are in jail. A lot of people go to jail because they're on probation. Probation gives them a list of conditions that which they must abide by, and if they don't, they get what's called a probation sticker put on them, and they get put in jail. And I want to, and we have gotten our probation department together with our Tim Cowan, who runs Jamesville, and the sheriff's office has been represented, and we're trying to make sure that we're not exacerbating the problem. Because another one of the effects of the overcrowding is that at Jamesville, we house a lot of federal inmates, and they do generate a lot of revenue. And in this budget, you'll see that the revenue line for housing federal for housing federal inmates is down $1 million. And that's because we cannot take federal inmates because our jail is too full. So that is something that we're keeping our eye on, and we have some solutions that'll make it better in the short term. But, you know, it's for another TMR session, because Sandra opened it up and talked about unemployment. Obviously, those things go together, and if we can keep things moving around here and keep people employed, that's the ultimate solution, I believe. The cost for our correctional health in this budget is up $1.2 million also. We have outsourced our correctional health, and we are in an RFP process right now, and based on what we're seeing in those responses, we believe that it's going to cost us another $1.2 million next year to have correctional health. So that's another thing we're keeping our eye on. Another big factor in this is debt service. And I want to tell you that we've tried to strike a balance here. There was a lot of deferred upkeep of the county facilities. Some things went years without being addressed. But I've told our department heads, we can't ask taxpayers in 2013 to foot the bill for everything that we haven't done in the last 20 or 30 years. We have to prioritize, and we have to keep our costs at a level where people can afford them and just handle things the best we can and get to get to the finish line. Maybe it'll take us longer to update our buildings or to renovate our buildings, but we have to keep an eye on the taxpayer's wallet. At the same time, we have a AAA bond rating in Onondaga County, and interest rates have been at record lows because of the recession. So we want to take advantage of the great position Onondaga County's in to borrow money, because it was virtually free, the money that we could borrow during the recession in Onondaga County because of our bond rating. So we have borrowed a lot of money to make those improvements, but I've shown the legislature what that does, because those bills are going to come due. What that does, this budget manages that, but we have to be careful that we are going to make accommodations for the spike. It's not astronomical, but it's different than it used to be. And we just want to make sure that we are accommodating for that looming debt increase. We did try to strike a balance. Another one of the things that's really exacerbated that debt service is the recent history where, because of the sales tax sharing formula, there has been a real desire on the part of the legislature to reduce the levy. And as I told you, it's come down $39 million in the last few years. In my opinion, sometimes it's been a little overzealous. For instance, last year, we try to balance, when we have a road paving program, we try to balance the amount of cash that we're using and the amount of borrowing that we're doing. Last year, the legislature took that cash out of the budget and used it to reduce your taxes and just increased on the borrowing side. So the goal of reducing taxes was met. It has exacerbated what we're seeing in that debt spike. So I've shown the legislature what the out years look like and just ask that everybody kind of keep an eye on things out in the future. Taking the cash out of the budget to reduce taxes and then just borrow the money is what will get a municipality in fiscal trouble very quickly. So, I am just cautioning everybody that that was fine. We got through it. We have a balanced budget. We're okay. But we cannot continue to do things like that. We can't just reduce taxes at any cost. We also are going to have to pay our bills. Another concern is labor. This budget has a zero raise in it for our labor unions. 1% raises equate to about $1.2 million in local taxpayer dollars for a 1% raise. Our labor unions were all with relatively new contracts when the recession hit, and we did go back and ask for concessions, and instead of that, we didn't get the concessions that we asked for, so instead of that, we did have a round of layoffs, you might remember, a few years ago. But most municipal employees across the country have taken at least 1-0. The Onondaga County unions, by and large, have not done that. And this would be their first zero. So it's a little later than everybody else. But it's, I think, fair because the salaries were going up on average 3% during the recession. So in the very beginning of this, we're trying to address that inequity. But I've cautioned the legislature that this is looming. We're not going to have a zero again next year, and every 1% raise is about a $1.2 million cost to local taxpayers. So that's coming for next year. You will see in this budget that we have adjusted our parks fees, and I just want to tell you, generally speaking, what I try to do is balance the parks fees between taxpayer support and support from people who use them all the time. So we're constantly trying to balance that, and you'll see some modest adjustments upward. We also tried to focus those adjustments away from, for instance, when we have 95 degree days and we tell everybody that they need to stay cool and go to our beaches. We've tried to not make the increases in parks the places where we're asking people to go for relief to keep themselves safe. So you'll see that there's increases in renting our shelters, the pavilions at Oneida Shores and that kind of thing. We've tried to keep in mind that there's a real need for people to be able to get some relief, and our parks are the place that they do it. I also got a great email from a man named Sergeant Ron Chapman. He is a disabled Army vet, and he loves our parks, and he said that the fees for the parks are sometimes steep, particularly for our disabled vets, maybe that aren't working. And he asked whether we could make our parks more affordable for our vets. And I very much appreciated his drawing my attention to this. And I told him, absolutely, we can and we should. And in this budget, I have proposed that our county parks be free to all vets and all active duty military all the time, everywhere. There's no group of people that we would rather have in our parks with us than the military, to whom we owe so much. So this budget takes into account that we would make the parks free for our vets, and I really do thank that man for taking time to write to my office. Sewer rates are up in this budget, and it's because of the Onondaga Lake cleanup. It's very expensive. When I came into office, we were getting a lot of federal money. Jim Walsh was still in office, and there was a lot of federal money coming for the cleanup, which is mandated by the court. That federal money is gone. We were also getting, I think, about a $10 million state contribution. That money is also gone. So the cleanup is on us. The good news is it's less expensive than it was going to be. The Save the Rain really is going to be ultimately less expensive because we're putting things in the ground to manage our stormwater that don't take any energy. You're not going to have energy costs to operate the pumps. We're not going to have the ongoing maintenance of replacing pipes as they get old. So we are keeping our eye on the cost, but it's on us, and we have to address that. I went to the legislature last year, and I said, I need to be 5 years from now at about a 25% increase. So I'd like to propose a 5-year annual increase in the sewer rate to kind of make it a smooth adjustment for folks. And you might be able to guess how much I got last year. Zero. So this year, I've proposed a 10% increase. And if we get the 10% increase this year, it'll be 5 proposed again next year and the year after. And that will take people's sewer rates from $362 to $398. It is about a $36 increase in your annual sewer use fee. And I wish that it weren't the case, but it is the reality. And there's a real philosophy that you'll hear if you listen to the legislature. I applaud it, to no new taxes, no new fees, keep costs down. And I fully subscribe to that, and I believe I'm living it. I really am a fiscal conservative who's made the cost and the size of our county government smaller, and at the same time provided the services that the folks who live here need. But I don't take it a step further. For me, fiscal conservatism includes paying your bills. And we can't just put off for the next people that come behind us the problem that we're going to cause if we just say no to an increased sewer use fee. And at the same time, we are under a federal court order to clean the lake, and we are cleaning the lake. You can see that not too far down the road, those two trains are going to hit each other. Okay, so I will just leave you with one final word, and it's the same one I left for the legislature. Our levy is $141 million in my budget. Our sales tax that funds the rest of the local portion of our budget is $250 million. That's the local portion. The budget itself is over $1 billion, but that takes into account the money that passes through the federal and state government. That's your local dollars, the sales tax and the property tax by and large. That mix is much more heavily dependent on sales tax now than property tax than it was when Nick Pirro was here. So we are more susceptible to a recession in the future, because if those sales tax drop off, we're a lot more reliant on what is a more volatile source of revenue. I think we're at a very healthy mix right now. I'm very comfortable where we are, but I want to make sure that we don't bring that out of balance to the extent that we're leaving ourselves vulnerable to an economy. It's not a very comfortable place. I don't sleep well if you make us too vulnerable to this economy. So I think we're at a real healthy mix right now. I've told the legislature we have among the highest credit ratings of any county in New York State. We got through the recession. Things are, I think, very good in terms of working relationships between the legislature, myself, the mayor's office, all of our state and federal officials. Everybody here has contributed to getting us through the recession. We're back on track, and if things can look sort of like this when I get the budget back on October 8th, we'll be fine. So with that, I will take your questions.
Thank you. To point out, not to squelch any questions, but just to point out that although Esteban Gonzalez, the Chief Justice Center Deputy, isn't here today, in 3 weeks, I think, we are going to have a mental health panel. He'll be introducing it. We'll have the mental health, County Mental Health Commissioner. We'll have the mental health clinical directors from Hutchings, St. Joe's,
that's great,
and Upstate. So we'll be talking about that. That's although great. That being said, we do have the two past jail deputies here. So thank you very much. Here you
go. Good morning.
Good morning.
My question goes to those retirees from Onondaga County. Effective August 1st, they switched over those seniors, 65 and older, I guess, mm-hmm. Medicare eligible. Went on the new MVP mm-hmm. plus or whatever, gold or whatever they program. I was wondering, what's the real fiscal impact of that for the county?
It's about $2.5 million a year, $2.5 million in this budget to move our retirees from the county health insurance to the Medicare Advantage program that we have through MVP. And the benefit is the same, but I use that word with a little asterisk. We have outside consultants that have told us that the benefit is of equal value. But you'll find that perhaps in the county you had a better benefit for eyeglasses, and at MVP you have a better benefit for hearing aids or something. But the net effect is that we have taken our retirees off of the county health, and we've bought a product from MVP that'll save us $2.5 million. And you should not, there will be some exceptions, but you really should not see much change if you're a retiree. I've had one or two people call my office whose doctors aren't on the list, but they are currently living in places like Florida. The doctors here should all be on the list, and we're going to, you know, continue to try to work with people. But it's a $2.5 million net savings in this budget to have done that.
Sorry, I didn't see whose hand was up next, so I have to make my way across the room. Brett.
Hi. I was at the Westcott Street Fair on Sunday and really appreciated the improvements to the
Thank you. To the
block there, and I was delighted to learn that the county had a hand in that.
Yes.
And it was also part of the county's green initiatives in some way. And my question is, are the green initiatives, say, you mentioned Save the Rain, are they still continuing? Are they proliferating in the new budget? Are there new initiatives? And if so, you say the fiscal implications in the long term are beneficial. Are mm-hmm. Is it at this point an investment, or are we seeing returns, or what's the status of green initiatives in county budget?
Okay, Save the Rain is the name of our green initiative, and that is fully funded in this budget, and you'll see a lot more of those kinds of projects going in. And what's been really great is the partnership with the city, because the city, instead of making us go through the Common Council process for every one of those projects when they're city projects, we gave them a comprehensive list. The legislature or the Common Council looked at it as a list and gave us the approvals, and we've done about 100 public green infrastructure projects in the city. We have a model that is really unbelievable from a man who I think he goes to MIT, and he's designed this computer model for us that can tell you where the rain is going to go, if it hits the roof on your house, or if it hits your driveway, or if it hits the roof on your shed. We can be very strategic about the green infrastructure that we're doing, and then we calculate the number of gallons that are going to be kept out of the storm system and compare it to the cost. And then we have a metric to say, if we can get that cost down to this level, then it's a green light for that program. And we're taking millions of gallons out of this storm system with the green improvements on Westcott Street. They're not done, and the business owners have been very patient with the construction that's been going on there and on, I don't know if you've seen it, on West Onondaga. We're doing the same project on West Onondaga Street. But when we get done, people are going to be amazed at how beautiful it is, and you're not even going to realize that's our infrastructure. That's in lieu of the sewage treatment plant that was going into Armory Square. So there's more of that coming.
Good morning. Good morning. I'd like to give a shout out to the county, to you and Ann Rooney and David Sakawi, for your help with increasing pre-kindergarten options in this city. The collaboration efforts have been just wonderful.
That's great. I hear that a lot about Ann Rooney and Dave Sakawi. They are they're among the best. And I'll tell you, I always expand too much on your answer, Sandra, but we had a reduction in what the state was going to pay for pre-K, and we made a decision, because we're required, let me just get this straight in my head, but we're mandated to pay for childcare costs for people that are looking for work. If you're in our social services department and you're looking for work, we're required to pay childcare costs. We're not required to pay if you're working poor. So the policy is such that you'd be better off not working. So we didn't want that to be the case. We want people to work. People want to work. So we increased with local dollars to make up the money that we lost from the state to support our pre-K programs so that people can, and daycare, so that people can continue to work as they want to. But you can't make it a cost to people to work and less expensive if they stay home, so obviously.
You implied that rising interest rates would in future budgets cost more for debt payments. Is there Are there steps you can take now to refinance and lock in some of these low rates for the next 10, 15, 20 years?
Yes, and we have. I go to the rating agencies myself with two packages. One, our new bond issuances, and then a couple times we have had refunds where we are refinancing the debt that we have. And I'm not referring to the interest rates on the current debt changing. I'm saying the interest rates are going up. We took advantage of these historic lows. We did lock in, but we're still going to have to pay that money back. And in the future, the money's going to be more expensive that we need.
At a previous session behind this podium, you talked about...
is this the takes criticism well?
Yeah. You spoke about trying to limit the extension of infrastructure out into the outer limits of the county.
Mm-hmm.
How is that going? Have you assessed any change there? Or?
From the county perspective, in terms of the infrastructure itself, it's going fine because we're not building roads and expanding the sewer district. But I don't think we're doing as much as we can. I don't think it's as bad as it was, and it would be interesting to see the rate at which we were expanding compared to now. That is something I'll look at. But I said, as I can, because you have given me the honor of having this job right now, we're not going to build county roads, and we're not going to build sewers in areas outside of the current sewer district, and we haven't done that. We haven't expanded it. But you'll see expansions because I don't have the authority over the towns, and nor should I, and nor do I want to. There's home rule, and they can decide, as long as they don't need a county road or a county sewer to get there, they can take a farmland and put a development in. They just have to handle it on their own from there. And there's wells, and there's septic.
There is a resource that can be used in Onondaga County, and that are just the people in this room and others. There's a lot of free time that can be given as volunteers on two levels. On the professional level, from, we'll say, business managers that might, or business mm-hmm. consultants that might wish to do it, and also on the outdoor level, where people could be working, we'll say, on Highland, on the end part of Highland Forest that hasn't been done, and other things of that nature, even using people from the jails. Have you worked into your budget the use of volunteers? I realize it costs money to supervise those mm-hmm. volunteers.
Well, I don't know. Are you calling the inmates volunteers? We do have inmates that work in the county, and we do have, and I have calculated it in the past, hundreds of thousands of dollars of savings, especially in our health department, from people that volunteer at our flu clinics and things like that. But I'm sure we could do a better job of that. And as you were talking, I was thinking I should get our parks commissioner and start his wheels spinning. Is there a specific project that we could put a call out for volunteers? There's probably people that would love to do that work at Highland Forest that you described. There's also, I had a meeting with the mayor within the last couple days. We're trying, this is my term, but I'm trying to look at some of the blight in the city the same way we looked at the sewage treatment plants as an opportunity. And I would love to see people employed in a deconstruction program that reuses those assets. Because if you look at the budget, now that we have the land bank and the Syracuse Industrial Development Agencies allocating money, it hasn't been spent yet. But if you look at how much it costs to demolish a house and then add to that you have to truck that debris, and then you have to pay the tipping fees. We had somebody in my office, the mayor and I did the other day, who's gotten his master's from SUNY ESF and talked about how they deconstructed the houses that are where the new dorms were built. And if you hear what the possibilities are, we're just now trying to understand. I envision sprawl being handled. You know, I envision a lot of volunteer. I envision a lot of under and unemployed people having work. So I would like to have a save the rain type program to address the blight, and I think there's going to be a lot of room for volunteers. But thanks for that. I'll get with the commissioner today.
Could you please bring us up to date on what's going on in coordination and collaboration with the city and the towns and villages to reduce cost?
Yes, and I can probably speak favorably, right, because we just got past the mayoral election from my party's standpoint, right? So, the mayor has opened her doors to any possibility to work with Onondaga County government to save money. And the best examples of that, the fact that the mayor and I have combined city and county purchasing, it's saving a lot of money in the city, and it's saving a lot of money in the towns and villages. The county, the city and county coming together with all its purchasing power and then making the offer to the towns and villages, if you want us to do your purchases for you, we can get a much better cost with that purchase power. I was on the city council, I think Stephanie was too, when there was talk of combining purchasing in the past, and it just never happened. And Stephanie Miner and the city council, to their credit, have made that giant leap forward. Our economic development departments are together. You saw our planning departments are together. Can I just editorialize real quick? Do you mind? That's your job, right? the planning department, I will tell you, and you know, it's not a good thing, but I didn't realize that the person who was going to be the director of the planning department was going to see the increase in his salary that he did. And I apologize for that. I didn't ask the question. We combined our planning departments, and overall the cost is the same. There's not a there's not an increase, but as Glenn is writing furiously over there, he can tell you that we had Andy Maxwell, who you probably all know and like very much, come from the city to us. The SURA payroll, which has been the subject of a lot of criticism, it's the Syracuse Urban Renewal, that goes back at least to the 60s. And every single mayor has had hundreds of SURA employees. Stephanie is the first one who's tried to reduce the number of people on the SURA payroll. And the effect that you'll see, one of the benefits, and I think SURA might have been a very well-intentioned thing in the very beginning. It got a lot of people into government that, for whatever reason, there were barriers to getting them into government. But the exchange, because they weren't in civil service, was they were paid a lot less money. And so the demand that we take folks off the SURA payroll is going to mean that they're going to be paid more money because they're in civil service jobs now. So we didn't give Andy Maxwell a raise. We transferred his job and the other folks in planning to similar jobs in the civil service structure in county government. And Elaine is smiling. But that's where he slotted. We didn't sit down and say, hey, how much money can we give Andy Maxwell? I was very surprised, and it will not happen again, which is why I just told you that our human services reorganization results in no raises, because it's one of the questions that I've learned along the way to ask. But if you want the mayor to take people off the SURA payroll, you're going to see higher salaries because the civil service structure pays more. So with that.
You can answer the questions as completely as you like. Don't feel bad about that.
My husband has avoided asking me anything for 15 years because I don't stop.
Regarding what might be done at Interstate 81, I guess the county legislature has unanimously opposed to doing anything different than what's there, if I'm reading things right.
I read the same thing.
What's your stand on it?
My stand on it, and this is the conversation that I've had with Joan McDonald, who's the state transportation person, Commissioner of State Transportation. I said, don't sell us short. That's the impression that I got when we very quickly narrowed to two options. And in reading some of the comments that people made, it's prohibitively expensive to do some of these other things. And I said, just tell us what's the best plan, and then give us a shot with Senator Schumer, Senator Gillibrand, the federal government, in terms of helping us to pay for that. But don't just assume that no one's going to help us and give us the most cost, the least costly, because there's a lot more to the cost of 81 than just the dollars and cents. And I think they've heard that. They slowed down on the process. They gave it another 30 days before they went through the SMTC process. And I do think I've heard a couple things that I personally like, but I'm not a transportation expert. There was somebody who talked about raising 81 and making like a, you know, it sounded like a piece of art that was high enough that it took away the visual barrier. That sounds wonderful. The tunnel that keeps everybody happy because you get your grade level streets and the traffic going 55 miles an hour sounds good to me. But I am not involved to the extent that I believe that I should be telling people what should happen with 81. I do know the legislature passed, I think, a unanimous resolution saying that they wanted 81 to remain intact. But I believe my role as county executive is to not limit us. And that's what I'm trying to do, is I'm saying to the state, all of the possibilities, tell us the best plan, and then let me try to sell the best plan before we make it not the best plan.
I can see a question over here.
Oh, are you going to correct me? Was it not unanimous, Linda?
It was unanimous to say that we did not want a boulevard, not that we wanted to keep it up high and where it is right now. Our caucus wanted to make sure it didn't have a boulevard that would take away from the people who live in Pioneer Homes, expanding beyond where they're living, and it would not send traffic around to DeWitt, where I represent, on 481.
Right.
However, it now has morphed into something different in the media, but my intention was never to keep it up.
That is
Monica's.
Yeah, that is a very good point. Monica and Linda are here. I'm guessing you're speaking for Chris also.
Thank you. Although that being said, I believe, and I guess I could speak on behalf of the Onondaga Citizens League, if nobody else, that it's not just a transportation issue. It is a community issue. It's an economic development issue. It's a quality of life issue. Mm-hmm. That being said, economic development, just to maybe close with that topic, is all about creating, I think, a good environment mm-hmm. for business development, for development. And I think that all the things you've talked about are doing that. But specifically in terms of economic development and what used to be a business of, you know, chasing jobs or doing things, is there, beyond creating a fertile environment for economic development, are there any particular initiatives, things that we're looking at to decrease that unemployment rate?
Yes. Mary Beth Primo is the director of the County Economic Development Office, and she is very, she's very smart, first of all, which is very helpful because she can hear what a need is and she can come up with a lot of good solutions for people that maybe are trying to expand in our own community and find a way to make it happen. And she's very aggressive. She's been out and about, and she has made a lot of things happen. I'm very happy with what I see in our Central Business District right now. This budget that I put in front of the legislature also includes an economic development fund of $1.5 million. And that is the first time that we'll have local money like that, because we're seeing a couple projects. I know Linda and Monica have brought me one. We've seen a couple projects that are really good projects, but when you put pencil to paper, they're not all the way there yet. And the folks that can bring jobs can't get over that hurdle that they need to close the gap to bring those jobs here. So we've proposed, and this is in working with the chairman of the legislature, Ryan McMahon, we've proposed something that gives us the ability to be nimble and be flexible and close small gaps for people for things that otherwise would be lingering for a long time.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Joni
anytime.
Mahoney.
Thank you.